Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884. Jimmy Akin always says I say the number too quickly, Joe.
So does Tim Staples. I think it might be onto something.
Oh, Tim Staples says the number too quickly?
No, he says that we say the number too quickly. I think John has also, I think several people have said we say the number too quickly.
All right, my friends, get your pens out. Get a pen and paper. 888-318-7884. Or you can remember 888-31-TRUTH. Now, I kind of wonder about this 31 truth, and I've never asked Carl Keating, founder of Catholic Answers, my predecessor, really brought back modern apologetics.
Yes.
I'm kind of wondering when he secured this phone number. Darren, do you know this story? Is it 3-1, Trinity 3-1, truth? Yes, that's correct? Okay.
Or like the first year of Jesus' public ministry.
Oh, when he was 31.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably one of those two things.
I'm going 3-1.
Yeah, so I think 3-1 is good.
888-31-TRUTH. Catholic Answers Live. Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett, my guest, Joe Heschmeyer, author of "The Early Church Was the Catholic Church," and also Pope Peter.
Yes.
And also, do you have two books with us?
I have two books with you. Two books with OSV.
OSV, is that a Catholic press?
Oh, wow.
Oh, come on. Wow. Actually, my dear friend Scott Richard runs the publishing arm of our Sunday Visitor.
I'm not sure if he's still your dear friend after that.
I know he is. I got a little text. He and I used to go to Rome together when we both worked at the Rockford Institute every January, and I just got a text from him showing me these steps that go down from the Janiculum Hill. Scott loves to do this kind of stuff.
I used to live at the top of that hill.
Yeah, so... So he said, do you remember these steps? And there are these steps going down. And like at first I was thinking, are those the steps in Georgetown from The Exorcist? And then I looked at them more carefully and said, oh, no, that's the Janiculum Hill. Anyway.
There you go.
Yeah, so no, OSV does a lot of good work. What are your books with them?
A Man Named Joseph, which is on St. Joseph, and Who Am I, Lord? Finding Your Identity in Christ.
And you have a book coming out with Catholic Answers
I
Press.
Do.
Have we named it yet?
There has been a lengthy ongoing conversation about the appropriate name for it.
Oh, was Todd Aglialoro, editor of Catholic Answers Press, involved in this lengthy conversation?
He was involved in two separate conversations, one with me and one with marketing. And those conversations had gone in two different directions, and not everybody was in the room together. And so there were different names that we thought were the name. And I just belatedly discovered that the name I thought the book was called and the name marketing thought the book was called, not the same name.
So
it might be called The Eucharist Is Really Jesus. It might be called something else.
Okay. So on this episode of How the Sausage is Made at Catholic Answers,
exactly.
my guest, Joe Heschmeyer, no, open forum, any questions about the Catholic faith, 888-318-7884. Let's go straight to calls. Enough back and forth, as our friends on Facebook would say. When's
yes.
he going to get to questions?
Yes.
I had to throw that out there for my friends on Facebook. Katie in Green Bay, I'm really glad you called back, listening, because I like your question, listening on Sirius 130, EWTN, and also because I like your bishop very much. Bishop Ricken is a very first-rate man and a dear friend of Catholic Answers. He was out visiting us here, I don't know, about 6 months ago. And, of course, the one approved Marian apparition,
yes,
north of the Rio Grande.
Yes. Well, thank you very much.
How can we help, Katie?
I am calling because, and now that you just said all these wonderful things about my bishop, which he is wonderful, but I'm newly converted, right? So I've only just been like a year. So I'm learning so much, and I feel like I've just been taking in all this information, and I've gone to confession a few times, and we have a new priest, and the few times I've gone to confession, I've been really taken back because he's told me things like missing Mass isn't a sin, and things that I like know in my heart are wrong, and I don't know how to address it because I went for missing Mass, and he said, oh, you know, stop with the guilt. He's like, missing Mass isn't a mortal sin, and I'm like, but yes, it is, isn't it? Like, this is all I've just learned, I'm not sure what to do about it, and every time I want to go to confession, which is 30 minutes, he's the only one there.
Wow.
All right, Katie, we can help. We can help.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, can I ask for a little more clarity? Is he just saying it's never a sin to miss Mass, or that the particular situations under which you're missing it?
I went to confess that I had missed Mass 3 weeks ago because I did something else with my son's wrestling match. And I said, and then I was guilty because I came back and I took communion and I learned I wasn't supposed to take communion my other two Sundays. And he told me both were fine.
Yeah, I think he's mistaken on that. So to be clear, it is grave matter to miss Mass, but it's not always a sin. So for instance, if there's like a horrible snowstorm or if you're dealing with an aging parent or a sick child or, you know, something like that, you know, God is not a legalist. And so a person who desires to go to Mass but for some important reason can't is fine. They have not sinned at all. Or a person who, you know, you live in the middle of the Amazon and it's hours on foot to get to a Mass. And, you know, you're not committing a sin in those instances. You know, the astronauts, there have been Catholic astronauts, they're not sinning if they're in space on a Sunday. They don't have to, like, have an emergency landing and then, you know, it doesn't work like that. So this is part of just kind of the notion of impossibility. God never commands or expects the impossible. But it also is a recognition that the Sabbath is made for man, not man for the Sabbath. But on the other hand, in a case like this where it sounds like you're missing for a sports game, well, God is more important than sports. And so I'm not denying the good of sports. You were right to say, I shouldn't have done that. And I applaud that. That's good moral reasoning. It sounds like there's real growth coming there. I'm saying that while wearing a Chiefs shirt, that there's things more important than sports on Sunday. And so it is unfortunate then. So I'd say the first thing is the priest, it sounds like, was mistaken. In that case, you can ask for absolution anyway. It's like he is not absolving you just of the things he's personally convicted by. He's absolving you of the things that you're confessing. And you can just ignore bad pastoral counsel. It's not infallible. If you know that he's mistaken on something, then you should go with what you know to be correct. It's good to get pastoral counsel. It's good to listen to experts. But sometimes even the people in a position of authority are mistaken about that. You can still go to him for confession. But you may find it more spiritually fruitful because you get better counsel to go to somebody else. I mean, I'll give you the last confession I went to, the priest gave me no counsel. He just said, try to do better. Your penance is one, our Father. And then he gave me absolution. And that was valid. That's all it takes. You know, so if you get good counsel, that can be really beneficial. The sacrament is still valid, even if the counsel you get is non-existent or it's bad. So don't beat yourself up over, you know, I disagree with this priest. Go with the stuff that you know to be true. And if you find him helpful, great. If you find him unhelpful, just continue on. And if you find a better priest in the area, feel free to go to him instead. But don't get too hung up, I think, on it. So I'm sorry you've had that experience. And it may be a situation where if it's a new priest and he's just mistaken, maybe you say something to the pastor and just say, hey, you should just be aware of this situation so he can kind of gently correct and guide the newbie priest along.
Katie, and Joe, help. Let's clarify a little bit here. It sounds to me that the priest here was mistaken and indeed perhaps misleading. But there is a possibility that he understood that Katie didn't know about the gravity.
Oh, yeah. So that's a good point. I talked about the legitimate reasons. You can also be ignorantly innocent of a particular sin. You know, you are not aware that you're required to go to Mass on Sunday. That's not disobedient. Like, you haven't heard. In the same way that, you know, if you're at work and there's a new rule at work and you don't know about it.
Right. The communion, the reception of communion, you can't be culpable for that if you did not know
that
it's a grave sin, and it is, to receive communion in the state of mortal sin. But your culpability depends on the gravity and your knowledge, and the third one, of course, your full consent. But you've heard those things, right, Katie?
Yeah, and I kind of thought I shouldn't be here, but then I'm like, I didn't know, and then I thought if I didn't go up, everybody else did, and I wasn't sure.
Katie, on that last score, I can tell you sometimes you just set a really wonderful example, especially for your kids, and you just say, you know what, I didn't get to confession. They ask you afterwards. And, of course, this is for everyone listening, because I think, frankly, a lot more people – well, more people should probably sit down and not receive than are in fact receiving. And we can all set a really good example, especially for our children. I had a great priest tell me this one time and just say, you know what? And then afterwards, let them know, look, no, I've got to go get absolution first. And then I've restored things with God. And it's a great teaching moment. So it's a good example. So never fret about that.
If I can piggyback off of that, in the catechism section on parenting, when it talks about parents being the first teachers of the faith for their children, a lot of it is in showing humility. Mm-hmm. And it's so counterintuitive because as a parent, you never want to admit like making a mistake to your kids. But I think as a former child, those moments where you knew your parents had screwed up, when they own that compared to when they pretend like they didn't and you know that they did, it's so much more convincing and so much more formative. It's really life-changing for a parent to say, yeah, I didn't do that right. Apologize to the kids, that sort of thing. But also admit, like, I sin and I have to go to confession. And, you know, like that sort of thing is that speaks so much more loudly than a parent pretending like they're perfect, telling their kid to get their act together.
Katie, thank you so much for calling. Katie from Green Bay. I want you to know that even though Joe forcibly made me wear a Kansas City jersey sweatshirt today, it's not even mine, it's his. You can tell it's
not. You can cut his mic, Darren.
You can tell it's not mine. My team is and has been since before I could speak or write the Green Bay Packers. So I just want to say there is an opportunity for people, in fact, going to Green Bay to make two pilgrimages, if you know, to Champion Illinois and to
I just wanted to point
Lambeau
out
Field.
That but, one thing you have in common with Aaron Rodgers is neither of you look particularly loyal to the Packers.
Very well. We do know that the trophy that was given yesterday was named after the great Vince Lombardi.
That's true.
A Catholic, by the way.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Katie from Green Bay. Give the great Bishop Rickon our love when you see him. 888-318-7884. Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer's new podcast, Shameless Popery, witty, entertaining podcast that informs you about your Catholic faith and equips you to better explain Catholicism, especially to Protestants, atheists, but and even to some Catholics, actually to a lot of Catholics. New episodes drop every Thursday. To subscribe to Shameless Popery, Catholic Answers' newest podcast, visit shamelessjoe.com. Catholic Answers Live, right back after this.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
There is tremendous power in prayer, because when we acknowledge that we don't have the power, but God does, things then begin to move for our good. Remember Matthew 19:26. But Jesus looked at them and said to them, "With men, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible." Now that's power.
Catholic Answers Live. Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett. Open Forum. My guest, Joe Heschmeyer. David in Peoria, Illinois, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. David, thank you for putting the app on your phone. Encourage everyone you meet to do the same. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, thank you for having me.
For sure. How can we help?
I was looking for some recommendations. I'm kind of reading my way into the church. And I'm working on the, you know, pivot point of authority, whether Good. It's within mm-hmm. the church and whether that also falls under the papacy and Protestant doctrines such as sola scriptura. And I'm very familiar with sola scriptura and with the Protestant arguments for where we get the Bible from, as I was raised in that. And so I'm looking for advice on resources for where we got the Bible. They're Catholic. I have access to Henry Graham's book, Where We Got the Bible,
sure.
Our Debt to the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if that's a good resource. And then also on ones that would be good for, again, Sola Scriptura, which I know you recently had a podcast come out, yes. I just heard. So that's great.
We can help, David.
Yeah. So let's start with this. Our own Jimmy Akin has a book called The Bible is a Catholic Book that is, I think, a pretty masterful treatment of this exact subject. Where I think he goes into some detail, but it's still readable. If you know what I mean, like there's always that balance between like how detailed to get. I think he does a good job of getting into the weeds without losing the reader.
It's an improvement over Graham's book, which is good.
Yeah. Okay. But there we go. So.
In fact, I think one of the reasons Jimmy decided to write the book is because he as much as we used to recommend Graham's book ourselves, but he said we can do something that. Among other things, takes into account a lot of research that was since Graham that was not available to him at the time.
Yeah, so why don't we send you that book?
Give your address.
This is
to
an
the
important
caller.
Kind of idea. I'd just say maybe a couple things very generally. Actually, you know, I'm going to send you a second book as well. My book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, has a chapter in it on how we know the four Gospels are supposed to be in the Bible. And the point that I make in the book is the exact same people who attest to the apostolic authority of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and their inspiration, people like Irenaeus, are the exact same people who are telling us that there's only one bishop per church, that the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist is a universal belief of the church, and all these things. And so a Protestant is in a very strange position to say, well, we think that they got the Bible right, but we think they misunderstood the Bible on all of these major doctrines. And it really should raise the question, well, if they're that unreliable, how do you know they were even right about Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? How do you know they're right about Paul actually being the author of the Pauline epistles? Or, you know, you see what I mean? That if you're going to say the Holy Spirit guided the process, why in the world would the Holy Spirit guide them into the right table of contents but not guide them into the meaning of the books? That the Holy Spirit's going to make sure they get the books right, but get the books wrong. You know, that sort of thing. So I kind of explore that question. So why don't we send you those two books and then read those, and please keep in touch. Call back with maybe the questions that raises or whatever the next question is on your journey. And, you know, for those who are listening, maybe say a little prayer for David and for everyone else who's called in who's maybe reading their way into the church right now.
Yeah, this is great news, David. Let us know how we can help. On the justification question, by the way, when that comes up, if it hasn't already, I recommend very much to you a friend of ours who's on the program for our conference this year, Robert Koons. He teaches philosophy at University of Texas, Austin. Very keen philosophical mind. He was a Lutheran, and justification was the final hurdle that he had to overcome, and he has written extensively and also recorded extensively. So Bob Koons, K-O-O-N-S, on justification. Let's go to Caleb, also in Illinois on 92.5 FM. Caleb, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
For sure.
And I always appreciate a little good-natured joke at the Packers. So thank you for that as well.
Okay, well, if you're a Bears fan, we've had plenty of laughs at your expense, we'll say.
Wow. This is a spicier episode of Catholic Answers Live than many listeners are used to.
Although
I
will say the family that owns the Bears are good, faithful Catholics. Caleb, how can we help?
My question, and I want to preface this by saying that I mean no disrespect, and I actually wrestled with whether to ask it, since I certainly don't want to speak ill of the dead. But I've been thinking about what it means to be the Pope in recent weeks after the death of Pope mm-hmm. Benedict.
Yes.
My question is pretty simple. What's the theological or doctrinal significance of whether a Pope retires? Why does it matter?
Yeah.
And I say that, too, as a Protestant who has a very limited understanding mm-hmm. of what the papacy is about.
Yeah, it's a great question, David. Well, first of all, I'd say I don't think it's a disrespectful question at all.
No.
This is something I think Benedict wrestled with himself, that you don't want to simply run away. You know, in his very first homily as Pope, if memory serves, he said, pray for me that I will not run away from the wolves as I shepherd the sheep. I'm paraphrasing him there. But you don't want to, in other words, resign just because things are hard or because it's scary or because there's an authority. And you know, in the same way that a parent doesn't just say, you know, I don't want to have kids. I better go tell the kids. Like, you know, once you've taken on fatherhood, there's a real sense in which that's an enduring thing. But one area in which being a bishop is different than being a father is that in the modern world, we have retirement ages. So as a bishop, you are expected to submit your retirement at age 75, and the Pope can accept it at his discretion. Now, there's no one the Pope submits his retirement to in the same way, certainly not automatically. Pope Francis is well beyond the age of 75. Benedict was as well, and John Paul II was as well. But nevertheless, there's kind of a recognition that to effectively shepherd the people of God, whether it's at the local level like a bishop or at the global level like the Pope, a man should be mentally and even to a certain extent physically capable of the role, of the task. That's a hard thing to assess, but I suspect as lifespans extend and medical technology improves that there will probably be more popes who resign in the future because they don't feel that they're mentally prepared for what the office requires, or that they're, you know, certainly if someone's in declining health, the question of, well, does the church need someone who's more fit, more capable of being the shepherd in this spot? That is a very difficult question to answer. And I think there's a beauty to John Paul II deciding to continue in office and allow the world sort of see him suffer and die slowly. I think there is also, I understand Benedict's reasoning as well in terms of saying it may be better for the church if I step aside and let another take the place. That's a difficult discernment, and I'm thankful to God that I'm not the one who has to make it. Yeah, those are the factors that kind of go in.
What do you think, Caleb?
Yeah, I thought that was a wonderful answer. Thank you.
Absolutely. Oh, you know, Caleb, you asked about the theological significance, and I'd be remiss if I didn't add one detail. There's a sense in which even after a pope retires, even after a pope dies, there's a spiritual connection that remains. And this is caught up with this idea of the communion of the saints. So, like on the liturgical calendar, when we celebrate a pope, we acknowledge them as pope. You know, it'll be Pius X pope, you know, on the liturgical calendar. And so in that sense, even after Pope Benedict resigned, he recognized that he still had a sort of spiritual connection with the church because of this role he'd been asked into in kind of this Petrine office. And trying to explain that to people led to a lot of confusion where they were like, well, are you resigning or not? But he continues, even now that he's dead, to have that kind of connection. I don't know if that makes sense because I know the idea of communion of saints is something that some Protestants really struggle with. But this idea that as you stand before the presence of God, you continue to intercede for those who've been placed in your care, whether that's, you know, a parent who's died praying for their children who are still on earth, whether that's a pope praying for the church, those kind of things. The connections formed by God and formed by grace and by, you know, all the circumstances of life, those don't just go away once you die. And so we want to acknowledge and respect that as well.
Caleb, call back anytime. Joe, we've had a lot of Protestants call the show today. This is really wonderful.
Yeah, I love it. I'm very grateful. So to every Protestant listener, you don't worry. You know, people are always worried, like, well, I'm not Catholic. Is it okay if I call? And it's like, yes. If only people who were like, I understand 100% of these things and have no questions called in,
yeah, actually,
the show
actually,
would be terrible.
We don't want those people
yes.
to call, right?
Yeah. So,
Caleb, God bless you, brother. Keep us in your prayers and know that we are praying for you. Elizabeth in Indiana, watching on Catholic.com. How can we help?
Hi. Joe, I'm reading Who Am I, Lord, right now. I really like
it. Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a question, though. So I am currently I'm placed in a public school, and I'm with first graders, and one of my six-year-old students keeps asking me, why did Jesus die? And he's practically begging me. And I don't know what to say in the context of the public school. And a friend told me I could say, Catholics believe, or like Catholics like me believe, but then even if I did say that, I wasn't quite sure how to fill in the blank. So do you have any advice?
Yeah, so I don't think you have to worry that the kid's a narc. No, I'm just kidding. He's undercover. He's working for the government trying to entrap you. No, you know, as a teacher, you have a great deal of, I think, leeway to respond, like you said, with a Catholic say, or, you know, some people believe, and Catholics like me believe, you know, those kind of things where you're actually answering a question raised by the child. You're not just imposing your own views. Like, you're allowed as a teacher to respond to student questions. And it might be that the distorted version of this that goes home leads some people to speak out and to maybe criticize what you've done. Then say you should be prepared for whatever blowback you get. But I think you should have an idea, especially in this case, since you know the question's coming. You should have some sense of how you want to answer that in with those kind of caveats. Like, Catholics believe, Catholics like me believe, and then be prepared to stand by that answer.
Elizabeth, we got to take that hard break. Appreciate your question. If Joe has anything more to add on the second half of the show there, we'll be sure to include that. Call back anytime, 888-318-7884, Catholic Answers Live, right back after this.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity in The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As Catholic apologetics have gotten stronger, Protestant responses have gotten stronger as well. And now they have their own answers to rebut the standard Catholic proofs. Don't fret, we've got you covered. In his new book, Meeting the Protestant Response, apologist Carlo Broussard gives well-reasoned biblical answers to Protestant comebacks. Order your copy of Meeting the Protestant Response today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
What if the voice of your deepest doubts about Catholicism rose up in the form of a human being and challenged you to defend your most foundational beliefs? That's the task apologist Trent Horn took upon himself in his new book, Devil's Advocate, a dialogue with his own best objections against the faith that he professes and defends. You can stand up against your doubts, and Trent will show you how. Pick up your copy of Devil's Advocate today at shop.catholic.com or at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett, Catholic Answers Live, Open Forum, my guest Joe Heschmeyer, Sean, Carol, Donnie, Timmy, we're going to get to all your questions. Joe, in the first hour, I extended an invitation to all of our listeners to join some of us here on the Catholic Answers staff to make the total consecration to Jesus through Mary as prescribed by Saint Louis de Montfort. I know Maximilian Kolbe has a similar exercise. This is a 33-day exercise. We're starting it on February 20th and ending on the 25th. So you want to end on a Marian feast when you do this. We're going to end on Annunciation. And really good practice anytime, but now especially good opportunity during Lent to get closer to Our Lady and with the goal, of course, getting closer to our Lord. But you've done it. Because you've got the chain.
Yeah, I did the Michael Gately version, 33 Days to Morning Glory.
Oh, is that the easy version?
Yeah, it is. I mean, okay, Father Michael Gately. I didn't choose it.
No, but, Father Michael Gately, if you're listening, God bless you. Thank you. I'm kidding.
I thought it was great. I liked it so much that
he uses some of Kolbe in his as well.
Yes, he does. Yeah. So in what he does, he looks at Montfort, he looks at John Paul II, he looks at Kolbe, and he looks at Mother Teresa.
Right.
And looks at, the point that I think he's trying to make is growing closer to Mary actually makes you closer to Jesus?
Yes.
Because the question people always have is, if I have a devotion to Mary, won't that draw me away from Jesus? And I've never encountered a person yet who that was true of.
No.
I've never met a person who, you know, they were like, I loved Jesus, but now that I met his mom, it's like, no, because if you have an authentic relationship with Mary, the last words she has in the gospel are, do whatever he tells you. And she's always pointing people to Jesus. And so you look at these real life examples of people who were fanatically in love with Mary, and they were even more fanatically in love with Jesus. And so you just think, okay, well, that's kind of the proof, you know, the proof of the things in the pudding. That's the pudding. You know, here are saints who really live by this. And I think that's the point of what Gately's doing, not just showing, like, here's how to be close to Mary. But in doing this, you don't have to freak out that you're going to suddenly lose a personal relationship with Jesus.
So the devotion goes back, of course, several centuries, back to Louis de Montfort and others. And so he's 17th century, right? 18th century?
17th? I thought 17th. Now you got me second guessing. I think you're probably 18th.
John Paul II breathed new life into it, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Like even the Totus Tuus. He was born in 1673. He died in 1716, so he lived about an equal number of years in the 17th and 18th century.
So yeah, all right. So, but like I say, during his papacy, Totus Tuus comes from this consecration.
Exactly. Yeah. The totally yours,
all yours.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that, you know, when you first hear that totally yours is Mary, you think, oh, wait a second, shouldn't that be Jesus? And it's like, it's not an either or. That God is made glorious in his saints, and so what does it look like to live? Not because it's the heart of this, and this is something I think Americans in particular struggle with, Catholic and Protestant alike, that we want the shepherd without the other sheep. We want the head without the body. And so we want the son without his mother. Mm. And we're constantly trying to separate Jesus from his people, from his church.
Yes.
And Jesus doesn't want to be decapitated. He does not want the head removed from the body. And so Marian consecration is a really embodied kind of Christianity.
Yeah.
And so I think there's something to that. And so I would just say, for anyone who's maybe squeamish about it, Gately's book might be a really good thing to pick up. Or you could just dive both feet in to St. Louis de Montfort.
We're using a translation from De Montfort Press by Father Hugh Gillespie, which Siobhan looked up the etymology of Gillespie. Do you know what it means?
No.
It means bishop's servant.
Does it really?
Did you know that
Catholic
Answers 2020 Gillespie Way?
Wow.
And we've been here for more than 15 years, and we're on the road called Bishop's Servant.
That's beautiful. Hindsight is 2020, I guess.
It is so beautiful. Well, I just want to extend an invitation to any one of our listeners, or all of our listeners, if you want to join the Catholic Answers staff starting February 20th. Like I say, we're using this translation by Father Hugh Gillespie from De Montfort Press, but you can use whichever one you want. If you want to really, really dive in, Angelus Press has a superb one, but I think you can't have a daytime job and do that one. There's like four meditations a day. So we picked this one because the language is modern. It's been updated. It's nice, clear, concise prose, and it's something you can get done in with an extra 15 or 20 minutes a day. But if you do decide to join us, as Joe invited in the last hour, send a note to radio@catholic.com and say, hey, yeah, my name is Susan in Nashville, and I'm going to be joining you. Or if, in fact, your name is Susan.
You can't all say Susan in Nashville. No. We'll get suspicious.
Yes, that's right. And let us know if, in fact, you're going to
do it. I identify as Susan in Nashville.
Or if you're going to renew. Maybe many of you have done this before, but I'm 57. I've never done it, and I realize I'm way overdue. So join us. Sean in Port Perry, Canada, listening on Alexa. Now, Alexa is not a station. It's a thing that connects you to a station, right?
I don't understand how Alexa works, but yes.
Maybe you can clarify, Sean, how you're actually listening to the program, but let us help you.
One of the best things about Alexa is that one can purchase books from Amazon in Kindle format, and she will narrate them.
So God bless her.
Like me, who is blind,
right.
I have access to an absolute wealth of Catholic literature that I've never had in previous years. I'm 70 years old now. I wish this thing had been around for decades.
Yeah. Glory.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, wait, let me try something real quick. Alexa, please buy Pope Peter. Did that work?
She's in the other room.
Oh, okay. You got away with it this time, Sean. Maybe every listener. We'll see. So we might get some angry emails. I don't know if that works.
Yeah, she's always doing that to me whenever whenever I call in, he yells something at Alexa.
That's hilarious. I know a sister, Alexa, who I think it's been difficult for.
I want to ask a question in regard to the founder of the Society of St. Pius X, Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre, wrote a book.
Spoken like a Canadian.
Vatican II, called J'accuse. And one of his major arguments was that in inaugurating the Novus Ordo Mass, the Catholic Church was actually aping Protestant church services. And I'm curious to know why he would have said that and what the Catholic Church responds to that with.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'm going to do a very superficial job. That's going to be my warning, because it's a really nuanced and complicated issue. Because first, you have the changes at the Second Vatican Council. The first major document is the Apostolic Constitution on the Liturgy, and almost every bishop in attendance votes to implement some liturgical changes. They were viewed as long overdue. There is a sense that there hadn't been good organic development in the liturgy. So that's one thing. And I believe Lefebvre was in attendance and voted for it. But then the second thing is how those changes were actually implemented in the aftermath of the council years later. And that became a much more controversial issue that a lot of people would say, yeah, you know, we're pro making some reforms in the liturgy. And then they saw the reforms and thought, nah, it's not what we were trying to do. Or some of them liked it, some of it didn't. And so those became a lot more controversial. And so when there were kind of trial runs of the liturgical reforms, those proved to be much more controversial than the initial should we make some liturgical changes kind of question. So that's the first thing. That the second thing is there was very much in the spirit of Vatican II, and I know it's a controversial phrase, but a sense of what is the good that we can recognize and affirm within Protestantism and within Orthodoxy to try to bring about Christian unity. Where can we find common ground and where can we build from that common ground? Rather than just condemning where they what do they get wrong, we can also affirm what do they get right and what can we build on there. And those two things should always be held in balance, right? Like you don't want to just pretend that everything the person you disagreed with on believes is wrong. Because a lot of what they believe is right. You know, they believe Jesus is Lord. Well, great. We believe in that too. And that is not a small thing to believe in. And so there was this sense, even liturgically, are there ways that we can bend? Not to do an injustice to the Mass, but I'll give you one concrete one. The Our Father, at the conclusion of it, Protestants say, "For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, now and forever." Not all Protestants, but a lot of Protestants do that. Catholics historically have not. That prayer, though, goes back to the Didache in the first century. It's absolutely of antiquity, of tradition in that sense. And so we incorporated that prayer under a different translation at the end of the Our Father. But there's a little prayer in the middle to show that we don't think it's part of the Our Father, but we still want to affirm and recognize it. So we tried to do things like that. I think in the pro column, there was a sense in which Catholics and Protestants started to recognize each other as brother Christians at a deeper level. At the con column, in many cases, the way this was implemented did seem like we were just aping what Protestants were doing better. And again, a lot of that depends on what did your local parish look like? How did it kind of implement the liturgical reforms? So, I mean, again, this is a much more complicated question than I can do justice to. But I think those are some of the kind of things going on. And why I think this is something that should be handled kind of carefully in a nuanced way, and in a way in which I think most people, both defending and attacking, maybe don't give it the nuanced treatment that it deserves.
Sean, I would like to let you follow up, but I have a queue behind you, and I want Joe to be able to get to them. Is that okay for now?
Absolutely. I can call again. Thanks.
God bless you, brother. Please do. All right. Carol in Indiana. On Catholic Radio.
There's been a lot of Indiana, Illinois, and Canada. I love it. It's just like people who cold places are calling in today.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
sorry.
People who speak French.
Yeah.
Did you hear Sean's?
Yeah, I was very impressed. It sounded very Quebecois.
Quebecois.
Yeah.
Carol in Indiana, Catholic Radio Indy. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you. Yeah, my question is, in the book Story of a Soul, Saint Teresa of Lisieux if I understand it correctly, she talks about being able to basically bypass or just go straight to heaven by serving your purgatory on earth,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, kind of doing your purification process on earth. I had never heard that from anywhere else, but it makes sense to me. And I just was curious if that's an official teaching of our church. I know she's a doctor of the church, so
yeah.
Can I answer this one, Joe?
Yeah, please.
The answer is yes, Carol. Yeah.
There we go. All right, next announcement. Yeah, because...
And by the way, that's great news.
It is fantastic news.
Because it's better here.
It's like paying off your credit card bills. The sooner you do it, the better.
Yep.
And paragraph 1030 of the Catechism says that all who die in God's grace and friendship, but still imperfectly purified, are indeed assured of their eternal salvation. But after death, they undergo purification so as to achieve the holiness necessary to enter the joy of heaven. And Therese's point is, don't aim at that. Like, that's aiming too low. It's like saying, what do I have to do to pass the class where if I take summer school, I'll be able to graduate? It's like, why would that be what you're aiming for? Instead, aim to excel. And so, you know, there's that important caveat in 1030, but still imperfectly purified. And I think she would say, don't settle for imperfect purification. Be perfectly purified now out of love for Jesus, and you don't have to worry about purgatory at all.
How's that, Carol?
That's perfect.
Carol,
if
you give your address to Edgar, we're going to send you a copy of Carla Broussard's book on purgatory.
Purgatory is for real.
Yeah, that which is the good news. The good news. What's the subtitle? I don't know. It's a great book. You'll love it.
I just looked at it earlier this afternoon, and I'm blanking on the subtitle.
Let's take a break here before we do. Joe, have you made a contribution to indulgences yet?
I have, although I was not aware I was doing so at the time.
Oh.
I asked, Thomas asked me to write something. I wrote it. It was too long, which is always what happens.
So many of you listening.
And he turned it into a podcast or a blog post.
Many of you listening know Thomas Graff.
Yes,
Graff wears a beanie hat indoors.
He's not the only one today, though.
I see. Well, Darren, I give him a pass.
He's wearing a Chiefs beanie.
Darren is a grown-up.
Yeah. I see what you're doing there.
No, well, Thomas is too. Well, Thomas is getting married soon.
He will be a grown-up soon if he's not yet.
Yeah. Marriage grows you up.
Yeah.
Thomas Graff is our social media czar.
Mm-hmm.
Can you be a czar and still wear a beanie, I think?
Czars are famous for having interesting hats, so I feel like maybe.
All right. And he now has been given additional responsibilities at Catholic Answers, including the curating, the management, the editorial oversight of a new feature of Catholic Answers magazine online called Indulgences, which are short takes, 200 to 500 words, on things going on in the world and how it relates to you and your Catholic faith. So, my friends, check out our new blog, Indulgences. I have one on there called Bloody Reminders about Jose Sanchez del Rio, one of the martyrs of the Cristero War, saying everyone who says it can't happen here hasn't really paid attention to history. Visit the Indulgences at catholic.com/magazine. Catholic Answers Live, right back after this.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
One time somebody said to me, why don't you air these people? And I said, no, because I don't think they're Catholic. He says, by what right do you have to say that? I said, I own the network.
Mother Angelica Live Classics, tomorrow night, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Television and Radio.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Catholic Answers Live, lightning round. Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett, Joe Heschmeyer. Timmy in Indiana listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. What's your question, my friend?
Hey, Chris, Joe, thank you guys for taking the call. Appreciate it. Just had a dinner with the wife, and something interesting came up about Lent. So basically, I didn't know that the abstaining from meat on Fridays is a mortal sin if you don't do it. So my question is, so basically my wife's question is, why did the church define that to be a mortal sin? And then from my end, why, how does that work if you truly don't feel like it's that grave of a matter?
Great.
Like if I'm objectively, I know that it's a mortal sin because the church says it is, but subjectively, I truly am not convinced, I guess personally, that if I died after eating meat on Friday, I would go to hell.
You're asking a very important question, Tim.
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's really two parts to it. First, why is this something the church takes really seriously? I'd give two answers. One, the Friday thing is obviously a reminder of the Lord's passion, that we commemorate Good Friday, and we do that really all year round, but in a special way during Lent. And so that's really an important thing. Second, I would say even sociologically, there's a reality that when you're bound together by a common penance, it actually does a lot for the unity of the church. And I experienced this. I went to Georgetown, and so I saw a lot of observant Jews, and which, if you've been there, that makes more sense than if you just hear those two facts unrelatedly. And I was really impressed by the way that keeping kosher kept people connected, even if they maybe didn't practice the other parts. There was something to that. In the same way that a uniform keeps you connected, and you know, think about all the military discipline, everything else, there are ways that you build up a sense of fraternity and camaraderie, that you have this spiritual penance, but it's important that it's not just an individual act, it's a communal act. This is something that both draws you closer to Christ, but also is something we're doing collectively as the church. You know, the mean girls who wear pink on Wednesday. You know, all of these things that just at a human level, this binds us together. So a person who knows that this is true and intentionally flaunts it and flaunts the authority of the church is severely doing damage both to their relationship with the church and their relationship with Christ. Not because there's anything inherently wrong with eating meat in the same way that if you drive through a red light, it's not that red light in particular has some effect that it just makes cars stop. It's like, no, you're actually undermining the order of things because you know the meaning of this and are continuing to flaunt it. That this is, you know, the lawful authority has said stop on red. You decide to drive through instead. You're in trouble. You know, the lawful authority said don't eat meat on Friday. You decided to do it anyway. You're in trouble. There's a good reason for it. The authority has put it in place, and then to just ignore it. And so to just say, you know, to me it's not a big deal would be like if you get pulled over for running the red and say, you know, I don't find that to be a traffic offense. And I think the officer would say, that's not a super important question, whether you find that to be a traffic offense or not, because you're not the lawgiver. Yeah, here's your ticket. I'll see you in court in a few weeks. Does that make sense? Does that help that this is something that you didn't choose for yourself? And that's actually good and important because penance like this, you think back to the book of Jonah, the king calls a fast because this is something the people can do together.
Did you get on it?
We're on right now.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. My wife just, she was putting down the baby, so she just popped up.
Oh, no, I understand. Sense. We've got a third on the way.
No, all good. But to the point of, like, I know one of the conditions for mortal sin is that you have to know it's serious. So if
right.
I, like I said, objectively, I know the church declares this is serious
yes.
enough to be a mortal sin. But just it's not from a subjective standpoint.
Right. It doesn't matter if I feel like it doesn't matter if it feels good to sin. It doesn't matter if it feels, you know, it doesn't feel like a big deal. That's not what's being asked. It's, well, do you know better? And in the case where you do know better and decide to do it anyway, that's where you run aground.
Timmy, let me refer you to an excellent piece by our chaplain, Father Sam Keyes, that was just posted on Catholic.com last week on the merits of obedience. And he gets to the heart of a great quote from, I don't think he quotes Chesterton here, but Chesterton says, obedience isn't really obedience unless, except in those occasions when, you know, you disagree. or when you don't, or when it doesn't make sense to you, or particularly is in those cases. So I refer you to that piece at Catholic.com. Let's go to Mike in Green Bay. Two calls from Green Bay today, watching on YouTube. Mike, welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Mike, we got about 5 minutes left in the show, so try to give me a quick question.
Well, I just wanted to let you know that I had dinner with the bishop this weekend, and he really is a great guy.
Okay, so, Mike, I said, give me a quick question, and you absolutely disobeyed me. But
I didn't even hear a question mark in your opening comments.
This is a very forgiving program. What's your question, brother?
I am a parent of a teenager who has gone through an awful lot between moving and changing schools and COVID and lockdowns and all of that. And she's really having some issues with her faith.
Sure.
And it wasn't able to be reinforced with activities with her youth group or any of that, because the youth groups all got shut down and now the youth groups aren't coming back together.
Right.
People and things have gone different directions.
Yeah.
Looking for some suggestions, because, you know, it's to the point where, you know, dad doesn't know everything.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, Mike, you're asking a question that lots of parents of 17-year-olds are dealing with right now.
Yeah, I think that's a very difficult question to answer. Father Sebastian Walsh has a book that we can send you on making sure, like trying to safeguard your kid's faith, that he's going to get into more of the details than I can at this point in the show. But I can at least speak in kind of general terms. But before I get there, are there particular questions your daughter's raising? Is it she's doubting the existence of God? Is she doubting something in the Bible? Is she doubting something the Catholic Church teaches? Where does she rub up against?
I think, unfortunately, the path in school has gotten her to look at things like this is what she likes or what she does because she can see it and she understands it. This is, you know, believing in something you can't see and you can't touch and you can't grasp.
I see.
You know, in a physical way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this would help or not, but you can say, do you believe I love you? And, I mean, how do you measure that in a lab? Where do you see that physically?
Well, true enough.
And so I think that would be, you know, if you've got the kind of relationship where you're confident she'd say yes to that question, that can be a good proof. This is something intangible, but it's still real. That there are a lot of things. So the problem here is an error called scientism. It's the idea that all truth is scientific truth and should be measured and tested the way scientific things are measured and tested, you know, using the scientific method in a lab. Well, look, the claim that all truth is scientific truth is not a scientific claim. It's a philosophical claim. So it's self-refuting because you have to believe at least one bit of philosophy, the error of scientism. Everybody believes in some philosophy. There's no such thing as non-philosophers. There's only good and bad philosophers. And so the person who says, I'm only going to live by science, is making a philosophical decision, not a scientific one. And so showing that can hopefully create an avenue, not just like a cheap gotcha, but showing, look, it's impossible to live only by those things that you've proven in a lab. Because even if you're going to live by scientific things, well, which scientists are you trusting? You're not trusting because you've replicated their lab experiments. You're trusting because of their expert testimony, their eyewitnesses. When we talk about Christianity, we're doing the exact same thing. We're saying a person who was in the know, a person who saw this directly, reports this, and I trust their authority. In the same way that if I read, a scientific journal, even though there's a replication crisis, even though sometimes journal articles have to be withdrawn because they've been, you know, fraudulent, I can still say, I trust their authority and I believe what they're saying. It's the same action in either case, but in one, we also believe that God and not just eyewitnesses is confirming it.
Mike, give your mailing address to Edgar and also give your email. I have a specific resource in Green Bay in mind that may or may not be successful here, but you did mention dad doesn't know everything, and that's an important insight because at this point in a kid's life, attaching your daughter to someone that she is going to listen to, is going to be a help in this in this progress. We're out of time, folks. Aiden, please call back. Joe Heschmeyer, great job.
Well, thanks.
And I'm Chris Check, sitting in for Cy Kellett. Thanks be to God. He'll be back in this chair tomorrow. Catholic Answers Live. God bless you all. Thank you so much.